JC Corcoran Podcast.
It was April the 41st, being a quadruple leap year. I was driving in downtown Atlantis. My Barracuda was in the shop, so I was in a rented Stingray, and it was overheating. So I pulled into a Shell station. They said I'd blown a seal. I said, fix the damn thing and leave my private life out of it, okay, pal? While they were doing that, I walked over to a place called the Oyster Bar, a real dive. But I knew the owner. He used to play for the Dolphins. I said, hi, Gil! You have to yell, he's hard of hearing. Gil was also down on his luck. Fact is, he was barely keeping his head below water. I bellied up to the sandbar. He poured me the usual. Rusty snail, whole grunion, shaken, not stirred. With a peanut butter and jellyfish sandwich on the side. Heavy on the mako. I slipped him a fin. On porpoise. I was feeling good. I even dropped a sand dollar in the box for Jerry's squids. For the halibut. Well, the place was crowded. We were packed in like sardines. They were all there to listen to the big band sounds of Tommy Dorsey. What soul? Tommy was rocking the place with a very popular tuna, Salmon Chanted Evening, and the stage was surrounded by screaming groupers, probably there to see the bass player. One of them was this cute little yellowtail, and she's giving me the eye. So I figured this is my chance for a little fun. You know, piece of Pisces. But she said things I just couldn't fathom. She was too deep, seemed to be under a lot of pressure. Boy, could she drink. She drank a lot. I said, what's your sign? She said, Aquarium. I said, great, let's get tanked. I invited her up to my place for a little midnight bait. I said, come on, baby, only take a few minnows. She threw me that same old line. Not tonight, I got a haddock. And she wasn't kidding either, because in came the biggest, meanest-looking haddock I'd ever seen come down the pike. He was covered with muscles. He came over to me, said, listen, shrimp, don't you come trolling around here. What a crab. This guy was steamed. I could see the anchor in his eyes. I turned to him, I said, abalone, you're just being shellfish. Well, I knew there was going to be trouble, and so did Gil, because he was already on the phone to the cods. The haddock hits me with a sucker punch. I catch him with a left hook. He eels over. It was a fluke, but there he was, lying on the deck, flat as a mackerel. Kelpless. I said, forget the cods, Gil. This guy's gonna need a sturgeon. Well, the yellowtail was impressed with the way I landed her boyfriend. She came over to me, she said, hey, big boy, you're really a game fish. What's your name? I said, Marlin. Well, from then on, we had a whale of a time. I took her to dinner. I took her to dance. I bought her a bouquet of flounders. And then I went home with her. And what did I get for my trouble? Case of the clams. Think I had a wet dream. Cruising through the Gulf Stream.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside? I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, January 10th, 2023, 36 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. How you doing, kids? You are at JC on the line. Weather.com. Weather up and down, all over the place. Maybe a rain, snow mix. What'd they say? I think that's Thursday night. Oh, geez. Temperature goes up, temperature goes down. It's amazing anybody is well right now. It's almost like people aren't really worried about COVID anymore, even though China, I don't even want to start on that because yesterday we talked about it. But people are talking about the flu right now. Whatever this flu strain that's going through the Midwest right now is, it must be awful because people are even posting about it on anti-social media, basically saying, don't get this. Whatever you do, don't get this. And I'm inclined to put a mask on. Again, I really don't care what anybody thinks. Besides, if you have a baseball hat or some sort of winter hat on, keeps your head warm, and then a mask, most people won't even know it's you anyhow. So there.
This
is Thursday, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Transitions that precip that's moving into northwest Missouri to snow. And as it slides our way, it's not out of the question that we couldn't see some wintry precip early Thursday morning. The snowfall accumulations very low. Same thing with ice and even road impacts. Not expecting.
You don't need much ice. This, by the way, today, the third anniversary of what I guess I'd call a little problem, especially when these things are not really forecast, the surprise ones. And in this particular case, people on this particular Friday, January 10th of 2020, started to be told at work that maybe it might be a good idea to leave early because this might be a little worse than we thought. And some people said, okay, fine. If you're telling me I can leave, I'll leave. Other people said, nah, I got work to do. And those were the ones that got whacked because a couple of hours later, it became very, very clear that something Armageddon-like was about to happen. And it did, too. This was the Friday evening where the ice storm came in and you couldn't even negotiate the little changes in the terrain of Highway 40. And people, you'll recall, got stuck. People were just, there was just a parking lot on all of the highways. The people who did get home took the, you know, 45-minute ride. People were like, it took me 7.5 hours. People were running out of gas. People were just leaving their cars on the highways and walking to the nearest business or hotel that they could get a room in. You know it's not good when Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel shows up, and he did. I went looking for him on Saturday morning when the roads were, you know, travelable. I couldn't find him. He was down in South County somewhere, but they keep changing their location. So I was like looking at my phone going, okay, where are they now? Try to figure out where they are. Because they never really say specifically where they are. You have to just sort of look and go, what does that look like? Oh, that's a school. Oh, I know that school. And then you get in the car and you start driving down. By that time, they're already gone. I was stalking Jim Cantore. It's like last year when Paul Goodlow was in Florida, and I drove down to see him there before the hurricane came in. But that thing 3 years ago tonight was just horrific, just awful. Ice ain't no damn good. Either is 2 feet of rain. They've already had a foot of rain out in California in some places, and they're expecting another foot. I think that's supposed to start today. And a lot of people are getting chased out. I mean, there's a place called Montecito in Northern California that is a big hangout for celebrities, you know, to build homes and stuff. Harry and Meghan have been told to leave. Oprah has been told to get out. Imagine that, being in some sort of law enforcement or civil defense, whatever agency we're talking about here. Go tell Oprah she's got to leave. You tell her. Rob Lowe has been told to get out. Adam Levine, Gwyneth Paltrow, George Lucas. They've all been told to beat it. I think it's safe to say we have a national champion in college football. Come on. Can you imagine being the guy who's responsible for placing commercials on the national championship in college football and then having the score be 65-7 and it was like, I don't know, 35-0 at the half or something. And you know people aren't watching anymore, which means they ain't seeing your commercials, which means also the ratings start diving and they can gauge that. They can say, oh, look, we had this monster number at the beginning of the game. And by the end of the first quarter, people were like, this game's over. Forget it. What else is on? And what else was on was the coverage of you Illinoisans, of which I was one at one point. J.B. Pritzker sworn in as governor. There was a delay in the ceremonies, though, as workers had to put extra stage supports. The dais. That is a big boy. It's cuffing season. And now we got a reason to get a big boy. I want a big boy. Give me a big boy. All right, SZA, thank you very much. Let's talk about awards. Awards, by the way, if you're in the business, you know, you're an actor, actress, or musician, or even a radio guy, awards are great if you get one, and they mean absolutely nothing if you don't. I got a bunch of them over here. I lost out on a bunch of them. As long as you got something to put on your mantle to prove that you've been in some form of business, it's all that matters. And I got them here, and that's great. There's a couple I wish I had gotten that I don't have, but that's it. I don't sit there thinking about it. But you have the Grammys, for example. Okay, the Grammys, legitimate awards process and ceremony and the whole thing. And even with the holes that are shot in the whole idea of who wins Grammys and even how you get nominated and stuff like that, it still is the choice of record. In other words, the Grammy is the real deal, as opposed to, let's say, like the People's Choice Awards. All that is somebody on the phone calling like 2,000 people across the country, you know, women who are stirring a pot of spaghetti, you know, trying to get some food out on the table. Hi, we're with the research company with the People's Choice Awards. Who's your favorite actor? And the woman is like standing there going, oh, my favorite actor is, honey, keep your hands off of that. Stop it. Don't hit your brother. I don't know, Mel Gibson. All right, thank you. And that's how the People's Choice Awards get done. The American Music Awards, all that was Dick Clark saying, well, why should the Grammys get all this attention? Let's do something different. Let's make up an award ceremony. We'll call it the American Music Awards. And I mention all of this because the Golden Globes are back on tonight. The Golden Globes, it's a great television show because, as opposed to all of the other award ceremonies, the Golden Globes are all actors, movie stars, whatever you want to call them, and they're all sitting together at big tables of like 10 and 12, and they're all loaded. Bottle of champagne, good champagne, for every person at every table. So they're all, as my mother would say, schnockered. So as opposed to a bunch of people in tuxedos that you don't know in the crowd of the Golden Globes is actually made up of the actors and actresses. Drunk actors and actresses. So the show is always fantastic. The award itself is a joke. The people who vote in the Golden Globes, it's about 90 people, and it represents the Hollywood foreign press. But when you start looking at who those 90 people are, it's laughable. All you have to have done is published an article once in every quarter. So in other words, if you got a newspaper in Spain and you write 4 articles a year, you can technically qualify to be a member of the Golden Globes. And all of them, all of these people are on the take. You give them a nice leather jacket with Top Gun on it, and they will announce to the world that Top Gun is the best movie ever made. Everybody, I think, remembers back in the early 80s, Pia Zadora wins for Best Actress in some movie that nobody had ever heard of. Turned out it was because they showered these critics, if you want to call them that. You showered them with all sorts of gifts and swag. And to be a voting member of the Golden Globes, you don't even have to be a full-time journalist. There's one guy who he owns some sort of giant refrigeration company, but somehow he ended up in the good graces of these Golden Globes people, and he gets to vote. And Gwyneth Paltrow wins the Golden Globe and also a beautiful Amana side-by-side refrigerator freezer. Thank you and good night. And then COVID really messed with Golden Globes. And then after that, there was some giant scandal about the misappropriation of money and people just skimming off the top and all sorts of stuff. And so the award has no credibility whatsoever, but the TV show, I'm sure, is fine. And I guess Oprah will be watching from a bar because she's been kicked out of her house. Congratulations to St. Louis. We're 10 days into the new year. We already have 3 homicides. And these carjackings at gas stations. Wise up, everybody. They had another really pretty gal who was on. It was like over at like Dorset and McKelvey. And she pulls up to get gasoline and leaves the keys in the car, walks to the other side of the car and starts pumping gas. And a car pulls up on the other side of the car, on the driver's side, and a guy jumps out, hops into her car, hits the gas, and good night, Irene. And she lost everything, too, her purse with all of her ID and money and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, they'll find the car in North St. Louis somewhere. If she's lucky, the purse is going to be gone. It's a shame that we have to do stuff like this. It's a shame, but we do have to do it. When I was a kid, we lived in the city of Chicago. And my dad used to pull the car into the garage, and he would lock the car, and then he would close the garage door and lock that too. And I said, Dad, if you are locking the garage, why are you also locking the car? And he said, because if they want the car, they're going to get it, but I'm not going to make it easy for them. And it's like I said, it's a shame that we have to live like that, but we do have to live like that. Otherwise, you're going to be on TV for all the wrong reasons. You don't want somebody to steal your winning lottery ticket. $1.1 billion. I'm going to try that again tonight to see if somebody wins. Oh, I was thinking about this the other day, too. Remember that commercial? This commercial has been running for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years. And I can't even remember what the commercial is for, but it's a spoof of all these slasher movies. And there's like 4 young kids in their teens. And it's the standard, you know, slasher horror movie thing. It's somewhere out in the country. It's at night and they're running from this guy. And there's chainsaws hanging all over the place. And the girl says, why don't we just hop into this running car right here? The guy says, are you crazy? Let's hide over here by the chainsaws. And you see the slasher, he lifts up his mask and just rolls his eyes like, oh man, they're not even making it a challenge anymore. I don't think you're going to see that commercial anymore, given what the situation is out in Idaho. I think that commercial has been permanently retired. All right, I wanted to get this in. I alluded to it yesterday, and Anderson Cooper ran another version of his interview with Prince Harry, and we were talking about this yesterday. I have no interest whatsoever in what the royals do, what the royal family is involved in, I do not understand for the life of me what Americans' fascination, almost obsession-level fascination is with the royal family. I don't get it. But I did give this interview a chance the other night, and I'm glad I did because it turned out to be quite a bit different than I would have anticipated. And we played a clip from it yesterday, but here's the one that I wanted to play, and I wanted to play it for you for a specific reason. So here is a very interesting clip. Now, remember, Prince Harry is like into his 20s. He's like 23 years old, and all along he still thinks that maybe his mother is still alive, that Princess Diana maybe is still alive, and that she faked the whole thing to get away from the paparazzi and the media, and that he's in his early 20s, and he thinks maybe his mom still could come back. He's like in total denial because he was just this little boy when he was told that his mom was killed in the car accident. So that's sort of where we are in the interview and in his frame of mind. And Anderson Cooper starts talking about this, and this is really, really interesting right here.
Harry now says it wasn't until he served in combat with the British Army in Afghanistan that he finally found purpose and a sense of normalcy.
My military career saved me in many regards.
How so?
Got me out of the spotlight from the UK press. I was able to focus on a purpose larger than myself, to be wearing the same uniform as everybody else, to feel normal for the first time in my life, and accomplish some of the biggest challenges that I ever had. You know, I was training to become an Apache helicopter pilot. You don't get a pass for being a prince.
The Apache doesn't give a crap about who you are.
No, there's no prince autopilot button that you can press and just takes you away. I was a really good candidate for the military. I was a young man in my 20s. Suffering from shock, but I was now in the front seat of an Apache, shooting it, flying it, monitoring 4 radios simultaneously, and being there to save and help anybody that was on the ground with a radio, screaming, we need support, we need air support. That was my calling. I felt healing from that.
All right, now, so you just heard him say that, you know, he's got all of the money, all the prestige, all of everything that anybody could ever want because he was born into that family. But yet it was his military career that sort of gave him purpose, brought him down to earth. And for the first time in his life, he just felt like everybody else. So now I want to go back a couple of years because one of the other people who I think experienced the same phenomenon was Michael Jordan. When Michael Jordan quit basketball, quit the NBA to go try to be a Major League Baseball player with the White Sox, people were like, what the hell is he doing? Is he crazy? And it turns out he probably wasn't. As a matter of fact, it appears that something like this can actually be responsible for a real moment of sanity. This is Bob Green. He is a writer, was a writer out of Chicago, and he hung out with Michael Jordan for like a year and a half. Traveled with him, roomed with him. It was just basically one of those deals where he said, I'm going to be your buddy. I'm going to be your shadow for a year and a half. And Michael Jordan said, perfect. I want you to do that. And so for a year and a half, I mean, the book was called Hang Time. It was a bestseller by Bob Green. And if you're one of those people who still doesn't understand what could possibly have been in the mind of Michael Jordan when he quit playing basketball as the best basketball player that ever played, in the view of a lot of people. And he brings himself down to a level of almost humiliation. Why would he do something like that? Listen to Bob Green.
And I've always thought, as you and I have talked about before, as fascinating as it is to watch Jordan on the field of play, which is very, Jordan in a hotel room with the door double locked, the do not disturb sign out, his feet up on a table, the phone off the hook, trying to make sense of this life of his, that Jordan is even more fascinating. So that's what I've sort of, because, you know, he's living Elvis Presley's life. And yet, when the room service guy comes up, he expects lines of assistants and guards and secretaries around Jordan, and the door opens up, and it's usually just Michael in a pair of shorts. You know, one guy, he's one guy on a 12-man team, and yet his life is so much different than anything anyone else really in the world is living right now that I've thought, to get to know Jordan the man, not just Jordan the athlete, is what I've tried to do.
Bob, people would look at Michael Jordan and say the guy has got everything, but clearly he has given up a lot. If you would say to Michael Jordan, what do you want for your life, for your family right now? What does Michael Jordan want? What would make him happy?
I think he'd like to go to a mall by himself. I think he'd like to be able to take his family to an amusement park. I think he'd like to go out for a walk. I asked him once. I said, when's the last time you went out for a walk by yourself? And he said, probably not since high school. I mean, no one's asking any, you know, Jordan's not asking anyone to feel sorry for him. I mean, the rewards are huge. But there are no phrases that are not cliches to describe how much a prisoner of being Michael Jordan he has become. And during the reporting for Rebound when we were down in the minor leagues, that's the closest I came to Jordan, seeing Jordan become, by his own doing, ordinary. It'll never happen, really.
Yeah, and by the way, the last time we tried to track you down was a couple of years ago, and we couldn't do it because you were following him around down through the minor leagues. What was going through his mind? Because to this day, a lot of people just think it was kind of the whimsy of a sports superstar who had almost like temporarily lost his mind.
Well, you know, it's a cliche to say it. It's part of the legend, but Michael Jordan was cut from his high school basketball team when he was 15. He was told, you're not good enough. And when you're 15, you don't know you're going to be Michael Jordan someday. all you know is the one thing you want the most, which is to be included on that team. You've been told you're lacking. You've been told you're no good. And when that happened to him as a 15-year-old, all he did is turn around and make himself the best player who ever lived. And the people who got him through that were his mother and his father. James Jordan really was Michael's best friend. And when his dad was murdered, Michael did the one thing you'd think he could never do, which is he willed himself to be ordinary again. He went to the one place where he was guaranteed to be laughed at and snickered at and told you're no good. He went to baseball. And he walked away from a place where he would be told every day of his life, you're the best who ever lived. And all of a sudden he was playing with guys. These guys were 10 years younger than Jordan in the minors. I mean, some of them 2 years before had been high school kids with Michael Jordan posters on their walls. And now, not only were they playing with him, but they were better than he was. And they knew it, and he knew it. And yet, in his grieving, in his mourning over what had happened to his father, it was the only way he could go to escape. I mean, it's impossible for Michael Jordan to be invisible, whether he's playing sports or not. So he went somewhere where he was guaranteed to in some way disappoint the people in the stands every night. And I really do believe that everything that's come since, coming back to the Bulls, coming back to the championship, was built on that foundation.
Just a wonderful moment from one of our old shows. And Bob Green trying to sort out and make sense of the Michael Jordan thing. And when you watch Prince Harry the other night, it's almost the exact same thing. I know that everybody thinks that if you have money and power and influence and you just, you know, you're a freaking prince, for God's sakes, that you got it made. Or that you're the best basketball player in the world. You got it made. You can run, but you can't hide. People still have problems. All right, after the Golden Globes tonight on NBC, Late Night Leslie Jones. I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Octavia Spencer, Prince Harry with Colbert. James Corden has Regina Hall. And Seth Meyers has Tom Hanks. This is the anniversary back in 2016 of David Bowie passing away. Aladdin Sane getting a 50th anniversary reissue in April. Birthdays today. Now we are talking. You want to know what men are thinking of when they think of the ideal woman? Like, I'll pick that one. It's Sarah Shahi. Sarah Shahi. She's in Black Adam, Person of Interest. And she was also in one of the last episodes of The Sopranos. She's the one that Tony Soprano does mushrooms with in the desert. It was one of the very last episodes of The Sopranos. She is 43 today and looking absolutely outstanding. Evan Handler, David Duchovny's best friend, Charlie on Californication. He was also Harry on Sex and the City. Evan Handler, 62 today. Sean Colvin, Sonny came home. Sonny got her a Grammy nomination, and then Sonny apparently left town because we never heard of Sean Colvin again. She's 67 today. Pat Benatar, 70. George Foreman, 74. Donald Fagen of Steely Dan, 75. Rod Stewart is 78. 74 years ago today, 1949, RCA came along with something called the 45, which became the new standard four records in 1949. Paul Lynde died on this date back in 1982. Sopranos, we're just talking about it, obviously, premiered on HBO on this date back in 1999. Six seasons. Seems longer. And I don't mean that in a negative way. And 2000, 23 years ago today, Melissa Etheridge said, yeah, I needed some artificial insemination work done. And so we got David Crosby involved. You got three guys. And Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And you picked the most insane one of all of them. David Crosby. I don't know. Seemed like a good idea at the time. I was in Los Angeles on this date in 1998 interviewing the great Robert Duvall in a movie called The Apostle. And I'm going to say this and you're going to laugh and go, oh yeah, that sounds like a great movie. Robert Duvall's wife in this movie, played by Farrah Fawcett. See, this is when Tina Fey and some of the other top-notch female comedians in the business often complain about these lopsided arrangements that you see in movies and in television. Fat guy with no money, Kevin James. His wife is Leah Remini. Robert Duvall is like 100, and his wife is played by Farrah Fawcett. So, you know, I wouldn't blame you if you said, oh, yeah, I'll run right out and get that one, JC. No, it's actually a really, really good movie. And the drummer for Rush, Neil Peart, died on this date in 2020. And this story made national news. And I'm just going to read it again. And keep in mind, this is going to radio stations and television stations all over the country. I'm going to read it just as it's written. Missouri's Jefferson County Sheriff's Office put out a call this week for casual drinkers who'd be interested in having a few adult beverages at the station. Even better, they're buying. There's no real catch. They're doing this to improve their deputies' field sobriety training. So after you're liquored up, they're going to ask you to do a field sobriety exercise and then take a breathalyzer test to determine your level of intoxication. Then they'll give you a ride home. It's as simple as that. They aren't the first ones to do this. These events are called wet labs. Wet labs. And police departments periodically do stuff like this to test their skills and fine-tune their DUI testing procedures. Naturally, a lot of people were interested, so the sheriff's office put out an update saying they have all the volunteers they need. They also clarified that the booze is not just cheap bottom shelf stuff and that they're not using taxpayer funds to buy the booze. And finally, the Cleveland Browns fired defensive coordinator Joe Woods. That surprised a lot of fans. It surprised them because they found out the Browns actually had a defensive coordinator. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Tuesday, January 10th, 2023 is in the can. Only 36 more days before pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. We are here every weekday morning right about this time, absolutely free. Spread the word if you can. Tell a friend, tell a family member, whatever, somebody who used to like the old radio shows, that we are here every weekday morning doing this here at jcontheline.com. You may follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Email me, jc@jcontheline.com. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.